To be able to, you know, to be in Canton with all the greats, you know, the people that I watched growing up emulating my game after, you know, taking little bits from here and there of all the greats that have gold jackets already. And from a neighborhood growing up, you know, just to be an example to all of them, you know, just makes you want to keep on living right and paying it forward.
That is newly elected Hall of Fame wide receiver Calvin Johnson, who walked away from the Lions and the NFL in 2015 as one of the most esteemed players in Detroit history. Today, get to know an unseen side of the man they called Megatron through the new business Johnson's starting, one that's rooted in the reason he left the game in his prime. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, February 9th. This is ESPN Daily. Alrighty, 3, 2, 1. Hey, Mike, thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, absolutely, Pablo. I've been wanting to come on the show for a while.
Michael Rothstein is ESPN's Detroit Lions beat writer, and he's covered Michigan sports for more than a decade. Well, it's your time. Calvin Johnson weekend just wrapped up, and you covered him during his 9-year career with the Detroit Lions, and Calvin Johnson was just elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, now officially establishing him as one of the greatest receivers and players of all time. So what's the reaction been like from the man himself?
Well, Calvin Johnson's not somebody who gets emotional ever. If you remember him during press conferences during his time in the NFL, he wouldn't say all that much. He's a very quiet guy, but you could see on the video that they showed on the NFL Honors Show, he got emotional. He started crying. He started tearing up.
You know, that's how 5 years. Anything I want to say to my peers, to the young folks, you know, just keep stacking good days on top of good days. You know, it ain't always going to be perfect, but as long as you're striving for perfection, you know, you're going to be all right.
So this is clearly an emotional moment for a player that, you know, often didn't get a ton of attention for being as good as he was because of the teams that he was on.
Calvin Johnson, touchdown Detroit Lions.
Megatron, touchdown Detroit Lions.
Goes left once, Calvin got him, touchdown Detroit Lions.
Yeah, and the team that he was on, the Detroit Lions, he made so much news, Mike, at the time when he left the game back in 2015. Remind us why and what happened there.
Yeah, it was a multitude of factors, but the biggest one was that his body was just breaking down.
I decided to retire based off of the way my body felt, the way I felt mentally, and all those things working together. One, you know, my job is to catch the ball. You know, so when catching the ball, when that kind of hurts, that's another flag.
His fingers, and this is a podcast, so people can't see it, but like his fingers are bent in like all these different directions.
I mean, I got this finger, man. This is something else. People was like, oh, why'd you put that on social media? My thing is like actually wearing away.
I had dinner with him probably a year after he retired, and we were sitting there and we're talking. He's telling me about his fingers. And I was like, it's that finger, right? And he's like, no, it's this one. Like, that's how beat up his fingers were, was that the mangled finger that was going the different direction.
That was the good finger.
Yeah, that was the better finger. And beyond that, if you remember, he did Dancing with the Stars pretty soon after retirement.
I played professional football for 9 years with the Detroit Lions. I'm on Dancing with the Stars because I want to prove my sister wrong. My sister literally told the world that I could not dance, so I have to redeem myself.
He almost had to quit Dancing with the Stars. He finished third, by the way.
Calvin and Lindsay! Wow.
He almost had to quit because his ankles were so bad, and that was plaguing him, his ankles and his knees towards the end of his career, that he could not necessarily dance during the week. And he was really worried about being able to complete that.
And his relationship with the team, with the Lions, how would you begin to characterize what that's been like since he decided to walk away?
Well, it's been interesting, Pablo, and I say that because the answer has changed in the past week since Calvin Johnson got in the Hall of Fame. Since Calvin Johnson retired, the Lions asked him to give about a little over $1 million of his signing bonus back on his last contract. That irked Calvin Johnson, as one would imagine that it would. So Calvin Johnson had nothing to do with the Lions, would not show up to anything publicly, would not talk much about it, didn't want to talk much about it for essentially 5 years.
Wow. So this is a cold war of sorts for a half decade between one of the best players in franchise history and one of the worst franchises in football.
Absolutely. Until Sunday. Calvin Johnson gets in the Hall of Fame Saturday night. Sunday, he has his press conference. I actually ask him on that press Zoom call.
Yeah. Hey, Calvin, congratulations. Everyone kind of understands the situation you're in with the franchise now. Now that this is official, does this change somewhat what your hopes are with reconciling with them?
I really do hope it does. You know, I think that I know that myself and Sheila Hamp, we've had some great conversations recently, you know, and it's been good to get to know her and just really just have those face-to-face conversations. So I think that we're moving in the right direction.
This, I won't be convinced this is done until it's done, but it sounds like they're heading toward a reconciliation, and at least both sides want it.
So, Mike, you clearly know Calvin Johnson. You reported on him for years, and you found yourself, amid all of this other context, you found yourself reporting on him again because of his post-football business endeavors. And his business partner is someone else that you covered, Rob Sims, his former teammate in Detroit, the Lions guard, who also left the game with sort of a parallel set of concerns physically. How did those two guys' relationship develop after they left the league?
Well, it just was a continuation from their time in the league. There was probably, I would say, a group of four or five guys that was really that core group in 2014 when they were good, and even before that when they were coming back from 0-16. It was Matthew Stafford, Dominic Raiola, Rob Sims, Calvin Johnson. And Rob and Calvin were always close. Rob retired first, then Calvin retired a year later, and they were looking at working in real estate together. Calvin Johnson, after he retired, was kicking around working in franchising a little bit. He had franchised a couple of Auntie Anne's stores, the pretzel company, and now they are in a much different area in cannabis.
Yeah. How did they land on cannabis, Mike, as the business that they wanted to pursue full time, basically?
I think it was a little bit of serendipity and a little bit of just Calvin Johnson first discovered cannabis when he was in college at Georgia Tech, used it more recreationally. Then as he went through his playing career, he realized the medicinal value of it. Rob Sims recognized the medicinal value of it. And when they were searching for stuff, cannabis became legal in Michigan. That opened up an entire market for them that was new, and that they said, well, this could be an area where we can help people. First off, that's their thing. They want to help people and provide medicine. They call it medicine. They don't call it weed or bud or any of the other names that we can list for probably an hour on this podcast.
Yes, we could.
And that's kind of how they got into it, was they knew it helped them. They saw the tangible benefits and they said, well, if this is helping us and it's something we enjoy being into and something new, let's do it.
And it's worth noting also, there are other athletes who've entered the cannabis industry and have provided another range of products. So what do you think sets Calvin and Rob's work apart?
I'm going to quote Rob Sims here, which is, quote, "Our vision is we're trying to change the stigma around cannabis. We don't call it bud, we call it medicine," end quote. And that's really the focus with their company, Primitive. It's that they are focusing on pain management and they're focusing on CTE, which obviously we all know is the brain degenerative disease that has affected so many former NFL players. It kind of started there where they said, not only can we help the people we used to play with in the NFL, we can potentially help all these people out there who are just trying to get through the day, get rid of some of the negative connotations that are still around marijuana and in the marijuana space, even as it does get legalized in more and more states.
So you mentioned the stigma around cannabis, Mike, and I actually want to get into pain treatment in the NFL. These guys played in the league for so long. How did pain get dealt with when they were players?
Well, I mean, they weren't players that long ago, but there was still a difference because marijuana at that point was still not as legal in as many states. The NFL had different rules then than they do now. some guys used cannabis, some guys used marijuana, Calvin Johnson among them. And he openly said that toward the end of his career, he used cannabis after every game and also sometimes during the week to, quote, lessen the daily drag, to get up out of bed in the morning, just really inflammation that he was having at the end of the day. But there was more than that. It's things that Rob and Calvin both saw in the locker room, and that is painkillers. And they saw guys that they knew getting addicted to painkillers.
My first half of my career, before they really like started looking over the whole industry or the whole NFL, the doctors, the team doctors and trainers, they were giving them out like candy. You know, if you were hurting, then you could get them.
And they felt like, well, cannabis can do a lot of those same things. It's natural. It's literally a plant. And I'm going to quote Rob Sims here, quote, there's a safer way. What do you do when you're done playing the game and you need painkillers and you can't get them as easy as you could when you played? What do you do? What's the answer for that? End quote. And that's kind of where they came in with saying, hey, we think we can help and look at it from a real medicinal standpoint.
All right, Mike, coming up, I want to hear more about the behind-the-scenes reporting experience you had with this growing business.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Mike, you visited the facility where Calvin Johnson and Rob Sims basically get to nurture their baby plants and check on them constantly, it sounds like. What did it look like? What did it smell like? What did you see?
Well, I think we all know what it smelled like.
So you're either seeing clones of plants that we have taken from seed that have gone to the facility?
It very much looked like a bunch of orange-hued greenhouses.
We got, you know, a handful of strains that we've been working with. Always looking for more.
I went there in October. They didn't have a sign out front. It was just a nondescript half brick building in really an office park. But you walk inside and it's a real operation.
These are probably next to go in the rooms once we had a harvest. The harvest coming at the end of the week here.
No, they have 6 different flower rooms. They have different strains. And they have a head grower even who that's their job is to handle all of that, to create their primitive products to eventually get out to stores.
So when you were there and you were spending time with Calvin and Rob as they're giving you this tour, what was it like to just see these former NFL players kind of in their element? And their element in this case was, as you described, a very sophisticated cannabis operation.
They were as excited about this than I think I ever saw them playing football. And maybe some of that has to do with the fact that the Lions weren't very good for a large portion of their careers, but they are there 5 to 6 days a week. They're working on opening a couple of dispensaries in Michigan as well. And I think every time I've spoken to Rob Sims in the last 2 months, he has been in the car driving to one of the dispensary locations or to their facility in Michigan to do something with it.
Yeah, I mean, the rigor comes across in your reporting, and the rigor also extends to the technical and medical and scientific, and I want to get into that with you. Dr. Wilfred Gua, who is he? How did it help shape the business?
So Dr. Gua works at Harvard. He works primarily with cancer patients. He's been there for the past decade researching ways to increase better treatment for cancer patients. And he's also part of this other thing called the Global Health Catalyst Summit at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston. And yes, that is a mouthful to say. And in 2019, one of the people that Dr. Gua invited was Dr. Tommy Shavers, who is the co-founder of Nestree Health and Performance, which is a neurostrength company that works with neuroplasticity. And Shavers had been working a little bit with Calvin and Rob. So one of the people that Tommy Shavers brought to this conference in 2019 was Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson spoke at the conference about cannabis. By the end of that summit, Calvin and Rob started speaking with Dr. Gua to see if they could find better treatment for the issues that they are specifically concerned about when it comes to cannabis and coming to treat with cannabis pain and CTE.
What are Calvin and Rob trying to find out? What are they trying to discover? How will they know if it's working?
So that actually is a great question for Dr. Gua. And I asked Dr. Gua that question. So this is where we get very scientifically technical. And I have not taken a science class since AP Bio my senior year of high school. So basically, Dr. Gua is working with nano drones, and those nano drones can help target patients more precisely in their bodies instead of having that overall effect. Now, you and I understand potentially that overall effect, which is the high, quote unquote, that people feel. This, in some ways, and some people might be like, why would you want to do this? Eliminate that high, but it gets the medicine to exactly where those pain receptors are to give better relief and more targeted relief. And they believe that this is something that they can do with that. Now, all of this, I should say, is still being worked out at the moment. They have not sent, at least as of this recording, any product to Dr. Gua yet, but this is what they are working on for the future with Dr. Gua's institute, which is the International Phytomedicines and Medical Cannabis Institute, which is a multi-institutional collaboration which involves Harvard faculty and also a bunch of other universities around the country. You know, this one image really stands out to me from that time there, which was I spent a good portion of the time Rob showing me around, and then Calvin came down. He had been handling something else. And Calvin Johnson is walking down the rows of these cannabis plants, inspecting almost everyone. Like, I mean, that should tell you how invested they are and how serious they are taking this. Because these guys could go play golf every day for the rest of their lives. They're choosing, no, we want to do this because A, they want to do something else with their lives, and B, they believe it can really help people.
So Mike, as we wrap here and we take stock of Calvin Johnson Week, where he's this Hall of Famer and now on the record cannabis magnate, and he's repairing his relationship with his old team, he's using his voice, it seems like, more than ever. And what goes through your mind when you hear this guy you've covered so closely finally do that?
Well, it's funny, Pablo, because the first time I ever actually interviewed Calvin Johnson was when he was at Georgia Tech and they were playing Notre Dame, and I was covering Notre Dame at the time, and we got Calvin Johnson on a conference call. You could not hear Calvin Johnson speak. He was so soft-spoken. He would not say a lot. He was super quiet. He got a little better during his time in the NFL, but he was still never a guy that was eminently quotable in press conferences, would tell long stories about anything. And now the Calvin Johnson you're seeing in retirement, the Calvin Johnson you see specifically when you ask about cannabis, is a Calvin Johnson that lights up. And this is the personality that I think a lot of his teammates have seen. And personally, and this is just an opinion, and we're not always supposed to have opinions as reporters, but I think it suits him really well. He really seems happy. Seeing someone happy when they're done playing and they find something that's a second career, a second act, that's, I think, just something really cool.
Michael Rothstein, thank you for joining me on ESPN Daily, man.
Hey, Pablo Astore, thank you so much for having me.
Up next, remembering another loss in sports journalism, ESPN's Pedro Gomez.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. If you watched ESPN over the last 20 years or so, you knew Pedro Gomez. He was one of TV's finest baseball reporters and an unforgettable voice in both English and Spanish, who was famously tasked with covering Barry Bonds in his home run chase. But he was also so much more than that. Pedro died over the weekend, unexpectedly, at age 58. The son of Cuban refugees, he is survived by his wife Sandra, his daughter Sierra, his son Dante, and another son, Rio, who now plays for the Salem Red Sox, continuing the family's baseball legacy. But I wanted to know more about Pedro Gomez, so I called up our own Howard Bryant and asked him to take us back in time. Howard, when did you first meet Pedro?
I met Pedro Gomez in 1993 when I was a prep high school writer for the Oakland Tribune, and I got sent out in September of 93 to go out and go cover the A's for a couple of days to go spell the beat writer John Hickey. The story is actually kind of funny in an embarrassing reporter sort of way. You know, we're all rookies once, right? Pablo?
Yes.
So I'm covering a game on a Sunday, and it's a 1-1 game. And Dennis Eckersley comes in, and Eck gives up a 2-run homer to Robin Ventura. And Eck gives up the home run. A's lose. It was a 1-1 game, which means it was not a save situation. And yet the Oakland Tribune headline on my story the next day was Eck blows another save. A's lose.
Mm.
I go back to the ballpark the day after on Tuesday for an opening series against the Royals. And we're in Tony La Russa's office pregame, and La Russa is just railing about the Oakland Tribune and how bad it is. And then he looks closer at the newspaper and sees my byline, and he says, Howard Bryant. Howard Bryant? Who is Howard Bryant? And and I sort of sheepishly raise my hand. And he just embarrasses me like mad. He just starts talking to the other writers about, you know, this is why the media is off, you know, terrible. And this is what I have to go through every day with you guys, with a whole bunch of profanity in the middle of it. And I sort of try to defend myself. And I say, the story said it wasn't a save situation. The story said it was a tie game. And La Russa just completely ignores me. And finally, while he's just going on, nobody else in the room says anything. He's just, you know, they're just letting La Russa just savage me. Finally, Pedro Gomez steps forward and says, come on, Tony, you know, we don't write the headlines. Leave the kid alone. Why are you embarrassing him? And everybody else said nothing. And I didn't even know who he was. I didn't know Pedro at that time. He and I'd never met him. We'd never spoken. I worked for the Oakland Tribune. He worked for the San Jose Mercury News. So it wasn't like we were even working at the same paper. And he stuck up for me in the middle, you know, one of the first times I was ever in a pro clubhouse. He stuck up for me. It was a pretty amazing gesture that you just don't see very often in that sort of cutthroat world.
So what does your relationship with Pedro look like from there? Because that is unforgettably helpful.
Yeah, well, and what it was Pedro made sure he was always looking out. And every time you saw Pedro, he was looking out for you. And you don't know why. It was just that it was his nature. It was who he was. He was just one of those guys who looked out for younger reporters. He looked out for you. He knew you were brand new. He knew what it was like being in there. And it's the epitome of paying it forward. And so you'd be at the winter meetings or something, and you would all be in a little circle, you know, talking to Scott Boras or talking to Billy Bean or Sandy Alderson or somebody. And nobody would, they would just leave you out there on an island. You have to make your own sources and make your own relationships. So you just felt like the schmuck sitting there not knowing who people are. And Pedro was the one who always broke the ice. He would look at these guys and he would look at Lou Piniella or somebody and go look at Terry Francona and say, Terry, do you know Howard Bryant of the San Jose Mercury News? Or do you know Howard Bryant of the Boston Herald or whatever? He just always made sure you weren't sitting there isolated. Pedro went out of his way to make sure that you felt like you were part of this. I think my favorite Pedro memory was 2016. I met in Mesa with the Cubs and watching Joe Maddon hand out t-shirts that say try not to suck to all of his players. And I do my work, I go back to the hotel, I eat a pizza, and then about 2 a.m. I'm just feeling terrible, vomiting, sick, the whole thing. I decide to go downstairs 3 a.m. to go get some air. I'm in the hotel lobby and I'm standing up, and the janitor looks at me and he's like, are you all right? And before you know it, I take a tumble face first onto the floor, out cold, and just total collapse. First ever ambulance ride. And I get to the hospital and it turns out my gallbladder's got to go. And I make one call. You've got one phone call to make. I make my call at 5 a.m. And who is right there but Pedro Gomez, because they weren't going to release me back to the hotel and back to the hotel without a guardian. And so Pedro Gomez was literally my guardian when I had to have my gallbladder removed.
So Pedro Gomez, as this figure who became so famous on TV, as one of the country's preeminent baseball reporters on television, he obviously meant a lot because of who he was as a Hispanic journalist, as a Cuban American journalist, as a guy who spoke fluent Spanish. What was your sense of his importance on that front, Howard?
Oh, it was huge, because after my first year on the beat, I went down to Guatemala to go learn Spanish, to go do Spanish intensive. And so, you know, Pedro was fantastic helping me with my Spanish all the time and making and introducing me to the Latino players in Spanish, forcing me to communicate with them, but also sending them the message that here's a guy who's willing to vouch for me and that you can trust this kid and he's going to make the effort to speak to you in your own language. Pedro did all that for me. And Pedro was a guy who, when he walked into a clubhouse, the Latino players immediately gravitated toward him as well, not simply because he was Cuban-American, but also because he did not condescend in that way in terms of speaking English to the players. He spoke to them at their level, at their comfort level, in their native tongue, in his native tongue. All of this, I'm doing my very best to sort of keep it together, because he was just such a professional. It's like one of the things that I hate the most in our culture is this phrase self-made. And every time I hear that phrase, I think about people like Pedro and that day with Tony La Russa and Pedro calling you and giving you a phone number because, oh, here's a guy you should talk to for your book. And you realize all you take all of this stuff together and nobody's self-made. And people like Pedro, they are the foundation to so many things, not just for their own careers, but helping out other people. And it sounds so Pollyannish, but to be a professional, that there's no reason to not be collegial. There's no reason to not be professional and to have the strength and to have the guts and to have the courage to be that person, to ask really tough questions, but to also do it in a way where you become an even more respected professional. You know, Pedro went up against Barry Bonds during the home run chase. Those assignments don't get any tougher than that. And yet he walked out of that with more respect than he did probably going in.
Howard Bryant, thank you for remembering your friend Pedro Gomez with us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you. He was a great man.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.